Hey, good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome to the Rocky Top Rewind. I am Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs, and we got a lot to get into here today. Breaking down, reacting, discussing, answering some questions from you guys. So go ahead and fill out those comment section. Tennessee's 28-18 win over Kentucky, and we'll do that here over the next hour here on the Rocky Top Rewind. Couldn't do it without our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. Thank you for being the presenting sponsor of this show. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers, you can call this phone number for a free consultation, 423-245-4185. Again, 423-245-4185, or online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That is TN Trial Lawyers. Special thanks to them for being the presenting sponsor of the show. Again, Tennessee improves to 7-1 on the season, 4-1 in Southeastern Conference play. Kind of a lot of the same, Brent. We discussed it last night on the podcast after the game. It's defense creating opportunities, defense holding, even though I don't think the defense had their best day. They still showed up in a monster way. It's the offense kind of slow out of the gate, but finding rhythm later on, and then Tennessee winning by a touchdown, and not comfortably, but Tennessee taking control of the game as the game went on. Regardless, it's a win. Tennessee stays firmly in the college football playoff conversation, and you're beating a team that you're supposed to beat, and that's what Tennessee did over Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you didn't get as many style points as you wanted, and I don't know. We've got to wait and see what this thing looks like on Tuesday, and sort of see what the talking points are going to be. I think one of the big talking points is going to be schedule strength, quality wins. I think you're going to hear about that. I think that's where they're going to try to set the narrative for the SEC with one and two lost teams. So we'll see. I mean, did you need to win more impressively? I mean, yeah. I mean, you probably did if you're talking about style points. But as long as you keep winning, it doesn't matter. And you advance. And as we learned yesterday, not everybody gets to advance, right? We saw what happened with Iowa State. And we saw what happened with Clemson, who was a heavy favorite at home. And you saw what happened with Texas A&M. So you certainly look at it and say, okay, you take the win and go. And I think the narrative is getting a little tried and a little tired for everybody about, you know, the offense is close. At some point, the offense has got to click, you know, and everybody's got to make plays. Now, the quarterback was outstanding last night. I thought that when I left the stadium after rewatching him today, I thought Nico played the best he has played in a Tennessee uniform. Perfect? No, but I thought he played really well in complete control of the game, and I think that's a big positive moving forward. Now you got to get everybody around him to play at the level that you need to, and he's got to consistently be that. I think I had these numbers in the 10 things. I mean, what he's done numbers-wise since that scramble against Alabama in the second half is pretty crazy. You know, about 70, almost 74% completion percentage. He's thrown for a couple of touchdowns. He should have three or four, you know, at this point, maybe five. But he's played well. And, you know, you feel like that he's starting to build there, and you just got to get those receivers to help him a little bit and see where you can go from there. You got another week that you need to really grow, and you need to improve and dial in on some things and get some confidence going before you head to Athens, Georgia.
Yep, that game against Georgia is on the road November the 16th. Tennessee will be at home against Mississippi State. They can score a little, but it literally does not have a defense on paper. But we said the same thing in certain respects about Kentucky entering this game. Nonetheless, you know, I want to talk about the offense stalling out here in a moment. But, you know, as you pointed out, Nico, really, really good performance. I thought, again, they're calling you. I think you wrote this in your 10 things, and I agree, because I thought it as well going back on the rewatch. They're calling plays to kind of tailor to what he does well, getting him out of the pocket, rolling him out a little bit, also kind of helping with the protection issues. Now, the offensive line has been much better the last couple of weeks, but, you know, still, it's not fantastic. But he's throwing so well off platform. I think, you know, that touchdown throw to Miles Kitzelman, throwing across your body was really impressive. His most impressive throw of the day, I don't know if you'll agree with this, but it's that 9-yard pickup to Dante Thornton there, you know, towards the end of the game where he was completely sideways, threw it, you know, on one leg and threw it only to where Dante Thornton could get it to move the sticks. I thought he was really good. Was he perfect in the second half against Alabama? No, he wasn't perfect, but he made a lot of big throws, and I thought that he grew up a little bit. And, of course, he wasn't perfect yesterday, but that was four quarters of really good football. So when we talk about the offense stalling out here in a moment, and I understand that that story's tired and annoying as it's close, as close, as close, your quarterback is playing well right now. So that gives you hope that, hey, you can score some points, you can figure this thing out, whereas we've seen it many, many times, Tennessee doesn't have a quarterback. That's not the case right now. Nico's playing really well.
Well, he has. He's put together six good quarters. Now he's got to go put together four more. You know, you want 10 good quarters before you go to Athens, Georgia, and that'll be a total different test and all those types of things. But you're starting to see him, I think, grow and evolve. There's a couple of things that have helped, and Ben's got a good point down here about his pocket awareness last night was really good. I think that when you have a better understanding of what's coming, okay, and I think that he's now seen so many different defensive structures, and he's seen what's coming, whether it's the kind of that balloon coverage or if it's a, you know, a blitz and stuff and different things like that, I think is good. I think the other thing they've done is I think they've settled him down better in the game early, because I think they've got him some stuff that works and that he's comfortable with. He's making quicker decisions, getting the ball out of his hands. Everything's not a 20-yard square in, right? I mean, there are throws there. I mean, this offense doesn't have a bunch of hot reads in it for blitzes. That's not what it's about. But they are putting some things, and they have put some things for him in that are – easier throws, that are easier completions, that are rhythm type plays to get him going. And the thing that I took from last night, I thought he saw the field well last night, which tells me that he feels more comfortable with his protection. He feels more comfortable with some things, and his eyes aren't dropping, because I think he's seeing the field better. There was not a lot of uh-oh throws. He had one where a guy was hitting him as he threw it. The ball floated on him. It could have been picked.
Yeah.
He threw another long out that guy jumped it a little bit. He didn't get there, but it was one of those, like, I don't know that it's a good play call, because that's a really hard throw to make. But other than that.
To Brazo, yeah.
Yeah, other than that, I think the stuff that they're asking him to do right now is very comfortable with him. And that off-platform stuff, the accuracy in that, you know, that's been his calling card since he's been here. It just was a stretch where that wasn't his calling card, really, in that Arkansas game, and it hasn't been that way in the first half. But he was better last night, certainly played better. I think he is growing up and evolving in this offense to a large degree.
He threw for a 74% completion percentage yesterday. That is the highest he's at in a Power 4 start in his career. He threw for, I think, 75% completion against Vanderbilt last year, but that was mop-up duty. Last night, when he was blitzed, he completed passes at 72.7%. When he was under pressure, he completed 60% of his passes. I mean, those are really good numbers to see, right? I mean, when you're not freaking out, you're not accelerating anything, you're standing firm, you're evading pressure, you're keeping your eyes downfield. That's some good stuff. We're going to continue to answer your questions here in just a moment, so get those in there. I'm starring them. I do want to talk about something you and I both wrote about, obviously. You're not going to beat Georgia. You're not going to beat teams in the college football playoff picture. You're going to have a tough time beating Vanderbilt the way they're playing right now if you are stalling out on drives. Four of Tennessee's first five drives in this football game were flat out not good. Tennessee, of course, you know, missed a field goal there on the first one, punted on the second one, and that was after the Chris Brazel, you know, drop touchdown. Let's see here.
Missed field goal,
and then scored a touchdown, and then we kind of broke it down. A lot of those missed field goals and some penalties sometimes derailed them. End of the day, you were 4 of 8 in the red zone, 4 of 7, really, because you don't count that last one, that kneel down. That's not good enough. You have got to finish drives. And that was what was really frustrating for the Tennessee offense, because, I mean, they almost had 500 yards of total offense yesterday. Just couldn't finish, and the quarterback was good. The run game was good. The overall, I mean, they were good on third downs. They should have scored 40 plus in this game. And we said that against Alabama too. That's not good enough to beat other teams on the road. It was good enough to beat Kentucky, but that's something that they've got to improve on. And of course, I'm not breaking any news here.
Well, and it starts by avoiding the negative play. Okay. And there's just too many, you know, sacks for a 4 yard loss, 10 yard holding penalty, jump off sides penalty. Just way too many negative plays for them in the red zone. You've got to avoid that. And You know, there've been several posters in here. I know you're starting a bunch of questions, but there's been several people have talked about, you know, running Nico more in the red zone. You know, do you need to run him more in the red zone? And I certainly think that that's something that, that you could look at. I mean, listen, here's where this team's really good. Okay. And I'd have to go back and look. I don't know how many runs Hendon Hooker had between the 10 and 20 yard line. I don't know that right off hand. Maybe he had a bunch. I know he had a bunch when he got inside the 10 and got inside the 5. When this team gets inside there, they're fine. They haven't left a lot of points on the field with the ball at the 5 yard line or the ball at the 7 yard line. They haven't stalled out there. They finished in the run game, quarterback run or not quarterback run. Where they're killing themselves is getting inside the 10. That 10 yard to 20 yard area right there has been a real struggle for Tennessee to get inside the 10 yard line. And that's just an area that's got to improve, and they've got to figure out ways to make that work better. In the passing game, maybe with Nico's legs, I got no problem with that. In the run game, they've got to do some things better in that 10 to 20 yard range, because again, once they get, you know, inside the 10, I feel like they just kind of run it down people's throat and get in the end zone. I mean, they don't miss many of those. They're just struggling in that 10 to 20 yard area.
We're going to come back and answer a lot of your questions, so go ahead and send those in there as we continue to break down Tennessee's win 28-18 over Kentucky here on the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night, presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem? Let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers, they specialize in criminal defense, family law, personal injury, DUIs, divorce, custody, alimony, parental rights, personal injuries such as car wrecks, accidents, whatever the case may be. They've got 80 years of combined experience. Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout state and federal courts in Northeast Tennessee. The firm's got a vast amount of trial experience. The practice has been in place, this one since for 43 years, with this specific partnership since 2012. Also having partners who are energized and ready for today's modern legal demands. They practice primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas. The firm has won multiple awards and have attorneys who are rated by super lawyers in the Mid-South with real trial experience. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need a divorce, help with custody of your children, or been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP is here to help you. 142 Cherokee Street in Kingsport, Tennessee. That phone number for a free consultation today is 423-245-4185. And of course, you can always visit them online at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. Spivey King and Spivey LLP, you got a problem? Let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers. Hey, welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night right here on the VolQuest.com YouTube channel. We are recapping everything that was Tennessee's 28-18 win over Kentucky. The Volunteers now are 7-1 on the year, 4-1 in Southeastern Conference play. We'll have another home game before hitting the road to go to Georgia this weekend at 7 o'clock. ESPN has the telecast. It is Tennessee and Mississippi State. All right, let's jump into some of your questions here, and I encourage you to continue to send those in. We'll start with Michael. Any word on Bishop's injury? Deshaun Bishop went down after a couple of plays in the ballgame in the second quarter. After the game, Josh Heupel didn't have an update. Is that something we'll probably have to pay attention to with the injury report as the week goes on, Brent?
Yeah, it was an ankle injury. I mean, he tried to get it loose on the sideline after he came off the field, and obviously they determined at the half that he couldn't go. So we'll see where it's at on the ankle deal. I don't know. I don't know anything new today. I don't know that there's anything long term there, but we'll just see. I mean, ankles are obviously challenging and tough, and we'll see how bad it is after a couple days on it here.
Kind of on that note, James wants to know, why is Seldon playing on kickoff return but not in the running back rotation? Heard coach say that he was hurt, but that doesn't make much sense. They went with Peyton Lewis last night, and I thought he did a great job taking advantage of his opportunities.
Yeah, Cam Seldon did not play kickoff return last night. Cam Seldon's played in 4 ball games, and that's where we stand. And he didn't play last night. He was not a running back. Off the bench, they went straight to Peyton Lewis, and I thought Peyton Lewis did a fine job. That, you know, that smells like red shirt.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's Cam Seldon's wishes, if that's a mutual agreement or what that is, but when you do that, that smells red shirt, and then that beckons a lot of people wondering what his future is going to be at Tennessee. In this day and age, we'll have to see. But him not playing last night makes me think that you probably have seen him for the last time this year. When you had an injury to Bishop and he wasn't your first guy in, and he wasn't listed on the injury report, that's a coach's decision not to play him. And I think that may be part of a plan that Cam Seldon has. So only played in four games, which puts him in a position to redshirt.
Yeah, and the last couple of games, it's been Deshaun, it's been Mike Matthews, it's been a couple of different guys, Peyton Lewis, been a couple of different guys back there returning kicks instead of Cam Seldon. Let's go to J.B. Collins. Do y'all expect Sankey fines for faked injuries to any team? That's a great question. I know he came out with that
scathing cool letter, scathing like, memo.
Again, it always go in last night. I mean, there were some legit injuries out there, and I'm not trying to say that they were fake. And then there were some fake injuries out there for Kentucky and Tennessee. I mean, how do you control that, Brent? I mean, it's an impossible task.
Yeah, I think what you're going to do in terms of the public reprimand for number one, and then you go into, you know, potential fining and that thing, is when you see a coach telling a player to take a dive, you know, fall down.
Yeah.
Obviously, the situation we saw in the Alabama game when they were in Knoxville here, where a coach shoves a guy out there onto the field to fall down, is blatant. So I think anytime that there is video evidence that something is blatantly done by a coach, that will be the easiest way to do the reprimand and multiple offenses. You get into a fine or whatever the case may be. So I think it's going to be hard to police. You know, I mean, is the head of officials going to watch every snap of every game on Sunday and Monday to sit here and go and look at the all 22, try to see if a coach is telling somebody to go down, then try to keep an eye on that guy to see if he goes into the injury tent? Does he not go into the injury tent? How quick does he come back out? You know, I don't know. I don't know how much detail they're going to go into that. But if there's a blatant, obvious one, then you're going to get the reprimand there. And then I think the question gets back to what we've all said for the longest time. How do you police it within the game? Because, you know, policing it after the fact, do we think we're really going to get to suspensions? I find it a little bit hard to believe that we're really going to get to the point that we're suspending a head coach, you know, that way. Because, I mean, it's like any other rule, right? Somebody's ahead of you on how to make that work. Right. Like how to work around the rule, play in the gray area. So we'll see. We'll see if Sankey has anything to say out of anything that came out this weekend. I watched a bunch of games, but I watched them in pieces. I didn't see, you know, a ton of injuries or a ton of anything happening. Obviously, Ole Miss is a team that has a lot of injuries for whatever reason, but they won big. So I don't think they had many issues or many opportunities or many reasons to have that. But we'll see. My guess is you won't hear a lot of public reprimands this week. Be my guess.
Yeah, I completely agree. Again, it's one of those things where, I mean, everybody's doing it, and it's really difficult to police it because, again, who's to say that this guy's not hurt in the moment, right?
Sure.
You just don't know. And
it's like Kentucky had a player, and I don't remember who it was now, but I mean, he was rolling around writhing in pain. Like he looked like he was in severe pain, and he went out, he missed a play, and he came back in. Yeah. So what was he hurt? Was that theatrics? Like, how do you judge that? Again, I think you start by allowing no other substitution other than the injured player, and your 11 guys out there have to take a knee between the hashes and they can't come over and see the coaches. I think you start there, you know, and then see where you can go from that point on. But I think that's where you start, and we'll see if you can police anything better that way.
Ballfan 205 with the $1.99 super chat. Big thanks to you for that. Steven says, if a playoff spot comes down to a 10-2 Tennessee or a 10-2 Alabama, will Tennessee's head-to-head win tip the scale, or will Alabama brand and their win over Georgia get them in despite the head-to-head loss? So it's interesting. Grant actually put this on the site earlier this afternoon. I think it was ESPN breaking down the scenario. A 10-2 Tennessee. ESPN thinks Alabama might get that spot because their strength of schedule is better. Their strength of schedule is better than that of Tennessee, despite Tennessee having a head-to-head. Plus, of course, they own a win over Georgia. In this scenario, Tennessee likely losing to Georgia. It'll be interesting. And again, I go back to what you said a moment ago. We'll have to watch the program tomorrow night. We'll have to listen. It's going to be interesting to see kind of what their talking points are to kind of how the committee is going to view these teams.
Well, here's what I don't think should happen. I don't think Alabama should get a bunch of points or credit for winning at Wisconsin being a quality win, because I don't think Wisconsin's very good. Now, they're going to be a bowl team, but I don't think Wisconsin's a very good team. I don't view that as any kind of real quality win. Is that scenario possible? Sure it is. I mean, that's what we're all going to be, everybody's going to be talking about is where do all the 10-2 teams in the SEC shake up? How does that shake out? You know, and then does the SEC get 3? Do they get 4? That's why the SEC is looking for help. Everybody in the SEC celebrated the Clemson loss yesterday. Everybody. Greg Sankey all the way down celebrated that one. You know, because you don't want the ACC to get more than one is what you're trying to avoid. You don't want the Big 12 to get more than one. That's why Iowa State losing was a help. You know, if BYU runs the table there, okay, there's their one, but do they get anybody else? How many is the Big 10 going to get? Those are where the lines are going to become, because is the SEC going to get 3, 4, 5? What does that look like with the SEC? So I think at this point, anything's possible. And I think the talking point Tuesday night will be all over the map.
Let's go to Jacob. Jacob wants to know, what does this team have to do to get more discipline, holds, and senseless penalties like illegal touching or drive killers? You and I talked about the illegal touching on the postcast last night. You know, they're going fast, sure, but like, correct me if I'm wrong, we didn't see a whole lot of that the first couple of years. We've seen several this year. We've seen 2 in the last 2 games. Like, that, to me, that's elementary. Like, to me, that's, you run the system, you have tempo, like, you practice every single day. Like, why are you covering up a receiver? That's got to be cleaned up. I completely agree. As far as the discipline in terms of penalties, this team will always be heavily penalized. Josh Heupel's teams are always heavily penalized. I don't see that changing, considering that's been the MO for 3.5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed in some of the defensive penalties last night. I mean, you got to learn to not line up offsides.
No.
I mean, scoot back, right?
I think the face mask, and I don't know if you saw this on replay, it looked like on the face mask for Omar Norman Lott, like he had the guy down, and he was just grabbing, like, stop, yeah. you got the sack.
That was a play. And then, you know, his extension of the arms on the sidelines, he got away with that one. Yeah. He's got to be careful, obviously. The penalty on Hobbs was really unfortunate. I get the rule. I understand the rule. You got to protect the head and the neck. I get it. But, you know, he's trying to bat the ball, and then his arm swings down and, you know, hits that quarterback on the head and the neck area. But it wasn't malicious. You know, that was just an effort play that resulted in a penalty. It's the senseless ones. And, you know, I think when you look at them, man, they're moving a lot of guys around pre-snap. At the receiver and the tight end position. I mean, they're inverting guys. It's like, you know, check with me, and all of a sudden there's an audible, and everybody's shifting and moving around. I mean, I don't remember the last couple of years them moving around as much as they were in terms of, okay, I'm out wide, now I'm in the slot, and okay, what are we doing here type deal. I don't know if they're trying to get in a perfect play, perfect matchup. You know, I don't know if that's something that's a result of headset communication, that they're trying to be too finite with some things. I mean, there's obviously a limit to how much you can put on a kid, okay, and put on a player. There's a fascinating clip that I saw on a reel somewhere of Matthew Stafford, like, steps into the huddle and calls a play. Yeah, he's like, wait a minute, Sean McVay's not stopped talking yet. And he steps back out, and he's like, okay. And he starts to call it again. He goes, nope, he's still talking. And it's like, you have to be careful not to overload, because if you over, and I don't know that Tennessee is, but if you overload, you can paralyze people, right? You can create more mistakes, you know, and alignment issues, and then you can slow down defensive guys if you put too much on their plate. I think there's a fine line that you're always battling with that as coaches, and it's easier in the heat of the battle in a intense moment or a critical moment to get into saying a whole lot, right? And no. I don't know if that's causing some of the problems or not, but the fact of the matter is, I mean, Tennessee's I've just accepted the fact they're going to be a heavily penalized football team. Yeah. But some of the stuff that they did last night and some of the stuff they've been doing is maddening, like covering up a guy lining up off sides. I mean, the ball's right there, right? Like, scoot back. You know, those are things you can certainly avoid because that has nothing to do with somebody telling you too much stuff or not telling you enough stuff.
Yeah, and they could have been called for offsides a couple other times as well. Mm-hmm. They weren't. Yes, the Amari Thomas jumping offsides, he was not drawn. But like they said, that was a false start. No, it wasn't. Like that was completely him. So I thought that we talked about this earlier. We won't run now. I thought the officiating was horrible last night, but it was on both sides. Clearly, it was.
That's not a crew that that many in this conference love. I don't think Josh Heupel is interested in seeing them Saturday night. I don't know who they're going to get yet, but I think back to back games with them is enough for Josh Heupel. And again, it was not all, man, Tennessee got jobbed or they got hosed here. I mean, they missed a bunch of stuff on both sides. And they struggle to mark the ball. There's just some operational things with them that's a little bit maddening.
Yeah, I was going to send a question, maybe a question from me to you. What was your take? We didn't talk about this last night. What was your take on the end of half fiasco? The officials could not figure out the clock. Tennessee had no timeout, so I get it. But, like, you got to know if there's a second or two on the clock and you are setting the football and you got the umpire right there. I mean, everybody better be ready to go.
You can't clap.
like what are you doing? And is this not communicated? I don't care about the Samson spot was a missed spot. I get that. But first down, second down, I don't care. Spike the football. Take a breath. Talk to your guys. Get a play call. I don't know if that's something that's not communicated from the sideline, if that's something he's coached. I don't know. I don't know the situations. But, like, that whole fiasco was just ridiculous to me. I mean, it was officials were bad in that, but Tennessee was not clean, Chris, at all. And would they have gotten any points? I don't know, but at least put yourself in position to try to get some, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And again, I don't know. I'm not involved in any sideline communication with any team anywhere. But clock management in college football, somebody ought to be teaching a class. Like, that should be like an off-season class for some people. Like, an expert should come in because it's not just one team. I mean, you watch it every week. There are coaches that are just sitting there going, what are you doing? I mean, Auburn's gross mismanagement of the end of the first half against Kentucky last weekend was just horrific. Well, I mean, it was just bad. And there's just a lot of head scratching. I mean, I always joke that it's like too many meetings. You know, it's you get down there and okay, you're at the 1 yard line, the 2 yard line. What are you going to do? Let's throw a pass. Like, why? You know, I mean, Penn State in the red zone against Ohio State was like, that's overthinking it. I mean, you know, you're overthinking it there. Like, I mean, and so I think sometimes it's almost like there's too many voices offering input on some things, and sometimes people get too cute and. But that crew's not very good. I mean, and I've seen that you posted a couple of these, Rusty and some others. I mean, I wrote about it. I normally don't say anything like that, but I've never seen a defensive end on the ground as often as James Pierce was. And James Pierce is a good athlete.
No.
He's not slipping and sliding. He's not crossing over his feet and tripping himself or whatever. I mean, he was grabbed, tugged, shoved, held, pulled down all night long. It was just not very good.
Yeah, but, and again, we don't have to make this the officiating hour because I'm like you. I don't want to spend time on it. But Rusty makes a – I thought this was one of the most blatant misses of all night. Like, you are down the field and Brew McCoy's getting tackled, and there's an official right there. Like, how are you not calling that?
The middle of the field official's got to help there because the official on the back side of that might have been blocked. The back of the guy, you may not be able to see that as well as you want to. But if you're an inside official and you look over there, you can see that Brew McCoy cannot raise his arm. You know, I mean, that's a hold. I mean, but hey, I mean, in the Alabama game, I think Ricky Gibson did it at least once in the red zone and it didn't get called. I mean, again, you're going to miss stuff. Those guys aren't going to be perfect by any stretch of the imagination. The problem with that crew that I have is they don't exude any confidence because there's way too many meetings. It takes them way too long to get something situated, set right. You know, it's like, okay, last night's okay. We got a huddle of three. Well, now it's four. Well, one guy left. Wait, two more came in. Now we're in a huddle of five. And they don't exude a ton of confidence in what they are and kind of what they're doing. And I think that doesn't help their cause at all. The other thing, but here's my last pet peeve on officiating, and then I'm embargoing myself for officiating for the rest of the night, okay? I don't understand like they reviewed whether Brew McCoy, where he stepped out at, right?
Yeah.
Maybe there's another one. Maybe there was a Dylan Sampson review that they had where there was like a long pause in action, maybe an injury or something. They waited until the huddle and then the play was called and everybody got to the line of scrimmage and then they called for the review. Like you had like 3 minutes to decide whether or not you were going to review it. Games are long enough as it is. Like operationally, if you're going to review it, let's review it. But don't wait. I mean, when you've had plenty of time to instigate or start a review process, don't wait till everybody gets to the line of scrimmage and you get ready to mark the ball, ready to play and wind the clock. Oh, wait a minute. We got a review. Like, why? You should have plenty of time to look at that play. That stuff drives me nuts. Last one. I'm done.
Ben wants to know, was Dylan Sampson benched or were they trying to save him for the second half? He finished with 27 carries, so I can't imagine you'd think they'd give him any more than that. The drive that Peyton Lewis is in, so Bishop, and tell me if I'm wrong here, Bishop got hurt. They put Sampson back in immediately, and that was Bishop's series, right? They go like 2-1, 2-1, and then they ride him in the second half normally. But whenever Bishop got hurt, they threw Sampson in. The next series, I think they were just kind of playing catch-up, trying to give Sampson a break.
Right.
And that's kind of why they went with Lewis in that series. They certainly wasn't benching, but also knowing he got 26, 27, and then last night 27 attempts in the last three games, obviously trying to get him a breather in the first half when they can, because Tennessee's method of madness in the second half is give it to number six.
Yeah, and you knew you were going to need him in the second half.
Yeah. I think Brent has froze up a little bit, so that's nice. Hopefully Brent will make his way back in here, and I guess I'll remove him from the screen here. Okay, he's coming back. So while Brent is out, I will continue to answer some of your questions. So send those in there. I'll star them here on the Rocky Top Rewind, presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. Okay, let's see here. That team push for D. Sam's TD, man, we were hyped up so good. I thought that was really interesting. I thought that was cool. Number one, talking about officiating, you know, Brent's not here, so we can bring that back in the fold. I am shocked, just shocked that they continue to let that play out. I don't know. I'm not saying forward progress was stopped or anything like that, but how many football games do you watch and, like, you see that play get called dead so many times, right? I was absolutely shocked, but the fact that that was the record breaker, I thought that was really neat. And I love seeing the entire team push him in there. I love seeing your quarterback jump in there, not just jump in there to get, you know, in the picture. He's going in there, you know, shoving him forward. Holden Stays comes around. Javonte Spraggins gets up off the ground and is shoving him forward. That was really, really cool. So I think everybody, yourself included, was hyped up, no doubt, at that point in time in that football game. Let's go to Mike. Is Turbeville an option at place kicker? Yeah, he is. There was a kicker battle, you know, over the spring and over the summer and in preseason camp. Max Gilbert was the guy that was, you know, relayed to us that was probably going to win it, and who was kind of the leader in the clubhouse. But Turbeville is absolutely an option. He's kicked in games before, not many, but he's kicked in games. Of course, he's the kickoff guy, and he's the guy that does it very, very well. And at this level, you don't want to overexude your kickers, right? You know, points and times, your punter, you got the same guy doing punt, kickoff, field goals, and that's kind of over with nowadays, especially with as much as Tennessee usually scores, the kickoff guy's usually busy. So anyway, you want to have the two different guys to kind of do that, and so Tuberville does such a great job with kickoffs. But yeah, 100%, he is an option to kick field goals for sure. I think old Brent Hubbs is back. Brent, are you with us?
I don't know what happened. I'm hardwired in. So
get that hamster wheel. Come on.
Apparently the hamster jumped off the wheel or something happened there. I'm not sure exactly what that was. But
well, you just missed a master class on tap dancing. Okay,
Hopefully I'm back here. Again, I apologize.
You're good.
I'm not on Wi-Fi, so I don't know. Apparently the old cable modem decided it needed a hard reboot for some reason. So anyway, I have no idea what I was talking about. I have no idea where we are. So we'll proceed to the next question.
Answer this question. Are you at all worried that Heupel and Jeff Levy having unique familiarity with each other? They've coached together for, you know, a lot of times. They run a similar scheme. Anything to that for this weekend coming up?
No, I mean, it probably helps Tim Banks just prepare, you know, because they see it every day in practice and they know some familiarity with tempo and all those things. I'm always more worried about a defensive guy who's got a lot of practice time and a lot of affiliation with, you know, and a lot of awareness and understanding of Josh Heupel's offense more than I am an offense similar. Because again, Tennessee goes against it every day. I think that will help Tim Banks and them prepare for this offense because they're going to see tempo and some stuff that they're used to.
Somebody says, I don't like Mike Matthews' question. I think it's in retaliation of this one. Are we going to see more Mike Matthews? I'm trying to pull up the snap count. Do you remember how many snaps he got last night?
Yeah, he was in it. I think it was 20. I think it was around 20 or 25 last night. He played the most he's played.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, you know, here's what I wonder, and I think somebody asked this question or posted in the chat earlier. Or maybe I saw it on the message board, is Tennessee going to live more in 12 personnel? Is that just going to become more of their base, you know, as opposed to a one-off for, you know, a 3-3 stack or, you know, that type of thing? Does that become more of Tennessee's base because of the weapons that they have at the tight end spot? Now, I would like to see Ethan Davis be a little more involved in that as well. But I thought Kitzelman looked fresh. He looked fast last night, looked quick. Yeah. I thought Stays played well. There's a comfort level there. They catch the ball well. If you're going to play a little more controlled passing game, you know, and then take a shot here and there, do you end up in more 12 personnel? Because if you stay in 12 personnel, does that force a team to play an extra linebacker and get out of nickel, you know, or do they stay in that nickel dime look and you can run the football?
Tennessee goes 4-3, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder. I wonder if Tennessee, and I don't think that's what Tennessee ever thought they would be. I thought they knew that package would be available to them. Yeah. But I wonder if they play it more than they thought they would play it down the stretch of this season.
And it's interesting, too, because obviously if you're in 12 personnel, you're playing two wide receivers. Typically, the slot comes out, so you've got Brew and whoever's on the other side. Right now, Squirrel White's still trying to get back full strength. They trust Nimrod. Nimrod plays, but I think Nimrod's had a couple of plays that he'd like to forget the last 2 weeks. So when you do that, you have two tight ends on there. You can take a receiver out. It's always an option for sure, and that was a part of the game plan heading into yesterday. Let's go to – I saw this question earlier. Logan, our guy Logan, wants to know, best quarterback performance since Milton versus Kentucky last year. That was a good one, but it was the SEC game. Milton had 6 touchdowns against Vanderbilt. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, he put up a bunch of that.
I'm pretty sure that was his first start in a Tennessee uniform where he threw for over 300 yards. It was the last one, and I think he had, like, 6 total touchdowns, the most in, like, 20-some-odd years from an individual player. He went off that game, so but obviously the Kentucky win, he played really well. Tennessee came back in the fourth quarter, iced that game away. Those are two big ones. And Nico had a good game against Iowa in the Citrus Bowl, but like James Pierce and the defense set him up, you know, like sure. Not taking anything away, but.
Yeah. I mean that night in Kentucky, Tennessee only punted twice. They scored, I think, on their first 5 or 6 possessions. They didn't finish in the red zone, too many field goals. But I mean, you know, again, to me, Nico made, and I don't want to say Nico's performance was better, but Nico made a couple of more wow, kind of wow type plays than what Joe did in that deal. But it was, I mean, Joe was terrific against Kentucky last year. I mean, that was arguably his best game. And, you know, I thought Nico took a nice step forward last night.
Kevin wants to know, is the runner-up of the SEC Championship guaranteed a spot in the playoffs? This is something we've talked about on the VolQuest podcast. I don't want to speak for you, but I think we're in agreement that if you make it to the SEC Championship game, you're one of the two best teams. I have a hard time thinking they're going to punish the loser of that game and keep them out of the playoffs. So I think that if you make it to Atlanta, you're in. We won't know for sure until we see that situation. You know, what if you take a team to Atlanta, they have a third loss, right? Or a second loss. I think they're getting in, but of course we won't know until we see it this year for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think the commissioners who have conference games want to do everything they can to protect their championship game. And you don't want anybody sitting here saying, boy, it was a mistake for us to play in that game. Now some coaches are going to believe playing that extra game is bad, you know, just for the health and well-being of your team. But I think if you play in that game, get beat, and lose a spot in the playoffs, you got a lot of gnashing of the teeth there. But you also would sit here and think, well, if Tennessee and Alabama are vying for the last spot and Tennessee's got the head-to-head, that should be a laydown, right? Like, there's just a human element to this that we don't know. And we're going to find out. We're all going to find out together, and it's going to create a lot of angst and a lot of anger and then some happiness and some all over the map stuff. I mean, it's exactly what college football wants, right? We're going to roll into, I mean, they're doing this on Tuesdays, the first one, and it's going to be the story of college football every Tuesday for the next month. It's made for TV drama. It'll take them forever to unveil it. They're going to talk about it for a couple of hours. I mean, it is tailor-made reality TV for sports fans on a Tuesday night. And that's exactly what college football is looking for.
And like, it's going to be so much. I always love football season. I love football season. I live for it every single year. But like, I'm having so much fun this year because literally there are 11 spots. Okay. Mm-hmm. 12, but 11 spots. And that program on Tuesday nights, it's not going to be the same old rinse repeat, same old rinse repeat. Why? Because teams are losing, teams are moving up. There are more teams that are actually in the conversation outside of, well, we know three of the teams. Who's going to be that fourth seed, right? I mean, it makes it so compelling. And I continue to go back to whoever said that the 12-team playoff is going to devalue the regular season. Are you kidding me? This has been a ball this year. So
November's never been more – there's never been this many teams relevant in the month of November.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Two years ago, would you care what happened in the Iowa State game?
No.
No, but now it's important.
Yeah.
You know, what happens with Army and Notre Dame is a big deal. You know, there's so many teams and so many games now take on a different level of relevancy in this month. That's exactly what college football – that's why the entertainment value of college football is so high right now, that it masks a lot of the other issues that college football has. You know, and college athletics has, which, by the way, college athletics, you got to find $20 million between now and July for rev share. You know, yeah. So just everybody's crunching numbers. Are we going to cut sports? Are we cutting roster size and this? What are we doing? We limited travel.
Telefees.
All kinds of things. But the entertainment value of this sport right now, nobody cares about $20 million. They just want the entertainment that they're getting because it's good entertainment.
I don't know where he is. He was supposed to be on the show by now, but I'm convinced Austin Price watched more of the South Carolina A&M game the other night in the press box than he did Tennessee and Kentucky. I mean, he was all over that game because, again, these games mean so much to the team that you root for. It's pretty fun to watch. On that note, Jeremiah wants to know, where do you see us ranked on Tuesday? Can the Vols afford another loss, Georgia, and still make the Final 12? Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be, again, ESPN doesn't think so. ESPN right now thinks if you lose to Georgia – if it comes down between Tennessee and Alabama, Alabama might get that spot because of better strength of schedule. We'll have to see. Control what you can control. Win on Saturdays. You finish 11-1, you are in. But for tomorrow night, for Tuesday night, where do you see Tennessee ranked? We've seen some projections as high as 7. We've seen some as low as 11. But pretty much everybody has Tennessee in right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're somewhere in that range. I don't know what it looks like. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they were 11 on the back end of that. And again, I mean, this is the starting point, right? And I think one of the things they should talk about, and they will talk about in this program, is how many elimination games are coming up. You know, how many teams are playing in games where you have to win. If you don't, you're out because you're not going to get there. I mean, LSU-Alabama is an elimination game, right? Yep. Winner stays in the hunt. Loser's going to be out of the hunt. Okay, I mean that's just where it's going to be, because Texas A&M lost. If they can find a way to win, they're going to get Texas at the end of the year, and that's going to be an elimination game for Texas A&M. If they beat Texas and are a two loss team, they're still in the hunt, right? I mean, because your two losses. I mean, one's to South Carolina on the road, which is not a great loss, but then you got Notre Dame. You know, I think Tennessee's going to be in the first one. If you're smart, you put Tennessee in the first one, right? Because there's a lot of attention. There's a lot of intrigue. And there's an entertainment ratings value to all of this stuff as well.
If you're smart, you absolutely have Tennessee. As long as Tennessee handles business, no matter what it looks like, if Tennessee wins on Saturday, they're in this week, they're in next week. See what happens in Athens, because if Tennessee loses, then they're going to drop out. So go ahead and get that squeeze for the Vol fan base those first 2 weeks.
And don't think that that's you'll never convince me that that's not a part of the topic and conversation early on in this deal, because so many teams are going to play and eliminate each other anyway. They're going to take care of business. They're going to take care of their standing based on what they do on the field.
Brian wants to know, does the wide receiver rotation become more like 2021? I'm going to say no. In 2021, it took a couple of games to figure out, but then they settled on Javonte Payton. They settled on Cedric Tillman. They settled on Bayless Jones, and they sprinkled a little bit of Jalen Hyatt in there. It took them about three or four games. They played a little Jimmy Callaway, Jimmy Holiday, and some other guys, but that was their guys. This year, I mean, Brew's going to play. Squirrel's going to play. It feels like Brazel / Thornton's going to play. And we've seen a little bit of Mike Matthews, and we saw 20 snaps of him the other night. So I do not think that it's going to be 2021-esque. I still don't kind of know what they're thinking or kind of their thought process on who plays the when and where. Oh, and Nimrod as well has played a lot. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to be that small like it was in 2021.
It only gets reduced if they stay heavy in two tights.
Yes.
And it takes the receiver off the field. That's the way that it gets reduced in terms of the number of guys there. I think the other thing you got to look at too is, are you always using the guys in their best? Are you doing with them what they do best? Like, is throwing a wide receiver screen to Dante Thornton his best play? Because he's a long strider. It takes him a minute to get going.
I said that last night. I'm like, the dude's been banged up and he's missed a lot of time, and you throw him a bunch of screens. Like, why?
Yeah, I mean, you know, is that the best route for him? You know what I'm saying? Is a deep ball always is that the best route for Brew? I mean, I think you've got to you got to run some stuff to their to their strength and what they do. Now, everybody plays it differently on the back end. But I don't think it's going to shrink unless you stay in a lot of two tight end sets. And again, I think you have to look at that. I really do. I think you have to look at how much two tight ends do we need to play, because is that where we're most efficient throwing the football? It was last night because of some of the zone stuff that Kentucky was playing. You'll get different looks from different opponents, but does that change the way people play you if you're in two tights? I think that's something you have to continue to look at.
Yeah, like Dante Thornton's your go guy. Throw it down the field to him. Brew is your sticks guy. Throw it to him at the sticks and let him get physical.
And your slant guy. I mean, he's your slant guy.
Absolutely. Like, he's so physical. He did a great job with that against Alabama. He did a great job with that last night. Like, Nimrod, I think, is better towards the sidelines. I'm not saying put him on the outside. I'm just saying he made some really nice catches on the sidelines last night, and he struggled a little bit in the middle of the field. But again, I'm not a coach. John W. wants to know, is Will Brooks the best walk-on in college football? I don't know other walk-ons in college football, but Will Brooks, good. I mean, he got hawked down last night because he went inside. He should have stayed outside. Boo Carter was just beside himself. But, I mean, what a year. What a story. He's Tennessee's best safety. He's not perfect, but from a guy that fans just couldn't figure out why he was playing, he sure showed him this year. He's got three interceptions, nearly had two pick sixes. Again, I don't know other walk-ons around the country, but he's got to be in that conversation for that award.
Let me ask you this question, and this is a poll question that there is no answer to, so I just want your opinion on it. What's the more surprising story? Will Brooks has three interceptions and is doing what he's doing for Tennessee defensively this year. Are Jalen McCullough doing what he's doing for the Rams after playing 1,500 snaps, whatever he played in his college career at Tennessee? After seeing McCullough for 4 years and seeing what he's doing in the Rams now, at Will Brooks essentially kind of coming out of nowhere, which is the bigger surprise to you?
I would say for me, it's Will Brooks, because we had not, like you said, we have seen Jalen McCullough play so many reps. Will Brooks, we saw a little bit last year, but he's primarily been a special teams guy. Like, I didn't know what Will Brooks' game was. I kind of know what Jalen McCullough is all about. And I do think he's benefited playing in the league this year where he's not playing 90 snaps a game. Now, he's getting good coaching and he's certainly elevated his play. And I won't take away from that, but you play 90 snaps a game, you're going to be tired. And he's, I don't know his snap count. I bet he's playing 20 to 25 snaps, if that, a game. And he's maxing out. Both are very surprising stories. Both are awesome. I would say Brooks, but man, what McCullough's doing. Had another INT today. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's a cool. And I'll say this. I mentioned this on the board earlier. I mean, I'm tickled to death for Jalen McCullough. And when I see him, the first thing I'm going to tell him is, dude, I was just straight up wrong. Like, I was, I mean, and I'll say this, McCullough and his family knew everything that was said out there about them.
Yeah. They're great people.
They knew everything, and it never fazed them. I mean, it just never fazed them in any way, shape, or form. And hats off to them. But by the way, going into the day, Jalen McCullough had played 110 snaps of football this year. By contrast, their guys, one of the corners for the Rams, has played 465 snaps. To your point, they are not wearing him out. He's playing in situational football, and he's maxing out his opportunities. Yes, Cedric Tillman's, by the way, if you haven't seen that, Cedric Tillman's touchdown catch today was one of the best toe taps you're going to see.
Really?
Oh, it was fantastic. How he got the second foot down was ridiculous. I mean, and here's a guy, again, it's about opportunities. It's about chemistry. He and Jameis Winston have a good chemistry with each other on the field. You look at what he's done last week, right at 100 yards. Today he had another touchdown catch. He had two last week against the Ravens. It's about getting your opportunity and taking advantage of it with a guy that you've got some chemistry and they both have confidence in each other. I mean, he's getting targeted more than he has at any point in his career.
Brett brings up a good point, and I think there was another question earlier in the show. It still might be one I haven't got to yet, about the offensive line's improvement the last couple of weeks. You know, Brett says Hurd looks so much better, hips are turning, run blocking for Seals, his sets look solid. Overall, the offensive line's been much better since, you know, Oklahoma, since Arkansas. I think they've gotten better. I think Tennessee's helped with the play calling a little bit, like rolling Nico out and all that type of stuff. What have you thought about the offensive line play, specifically the last 2 weeks? When they don't show up in real time, that's a good thing. When they don't show up in rewatch, that's a great thing. Nico was running around. I mean, they allowed some pressures, but it's nothing like it was against Oklahoma and Arkansas.
No, I mean, and you know, they're rotating some stuff. So some guys at guard a little bit, and obviously they're splitting time out at right tackle with Campbell. I don't think Campbell's played particularly well. I mean, he's good for a hold seemingly every game. I think Dane Davis. I think they've just kind of figured out, hey, we're going to split those guys and try to maximize sort of what we can get out of those two each game. I think the thing with Hurd is, and again, I think this is a byproduct of a high-profile transfer. Everybody knew that he got, you know, some pretty significant NIL money, whatever that is, to get here. It creates a level of expectation. And I think what you have to remember about Lance Hurd is he played very little football. He didn't play a ton of football at LSU. He had one SEC start, I think, against Auburn. And so I think he's learning a new system. He missed time with the knee over the summer. I think he was out of shape. He didn't practice enough in fall camp. And I think that he's sort of hit his stride a little bit better here and is playing better. It's not perfect by any means, but he has played a little bit better. And I think the thing that he's done is he's been more fundamentally sound, with his technique that has helped him. And it makes it look like he's playing, you know, pretty well. And I think he's playing better. I don't know how great he's playing, but he doesn't look like he's leaning forward. Like his sets look better. He just looks better from a technique standpoint is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. What did you, this one got me thinking about this one. So need more jet sweeps with faster guys. What did you think about the play call when they had Squirrel coming, faking the jet sweep to him and then hitting Samson right where he came? I thought that was a great play design.
Yeah. I thought it was a nice wrinkle. I thought they did a couple of nice things. The thing with the jet sweep, I think jet sweeps work better when you're in a condensed formation. I think jet sweeps are hard when you got guys sideline to sideline because there's so much traffic out there to get to. What kind of alley do you really create for him to run? Because you can't hook or pin to get a guy to turn the corner. So I'd like to see that in a little bit more tight formation if they're going to run those. But, I'm okay with some different wrinkles. I did like the fake jet sweep and try to get the ball out to Dylan Sampson. Just like I like the big heavy formation that they run short yardage in the goal line. I think that's a nice wrinkle.
Put Jackson Moy in motion this week. How about that?
Yeah, put him in a little motion action. Got Nathan Robinson in there. We got
like a natural.
Jason Jenkins as a lead blocker in there. I mean, it's fun.
Vols Time says, is Brew McCoy, appreciate the super chat, is Brew McCoy going to score a touchdown? Yeah, I on my rewatch today, I think Tom Hart or somebody said it, like, cannot believe Brew McCoy's not scored a touchdown yet. He's a big part of the game plan. They throw it to him. He's a huge part of the Alabama game plan, obviously. At some point, I feel like he's going to score a touchdown. Somebody else chiming in saying, yeah, people deserve the cookies. But it's kind of surprising at this point in the season, Brew has not found the end zone.
Well, I mean, how many touchdown passes has Tennessee thrown?
Not as many as you think, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not been, you know, it's not been, what, they got 11 touchdown passes, I think, is what it is. And probably the tight ends lead the way with the touchdown receptions. You thought that they would hit one somewhere along the way, but, you know, I thought Brazel would have more touchdowns. You know, I thought they would be more explosive, be a more bigger play offense than what they've been to this point. When you miss two field goals, you fumble, you have holding penalties and the things you do in the first half, it takes away and limits your opportunity to score touchdowns. So they just got to be more efficient for sure.
Ethan, a big fan of the VolQuest hoodie that I'm wearing. Ethan, we appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for the super chat. Got a couple more here that I've starred.
By the way, I am working to hopefully try to at some point create some kind of pop-up store where people can buy some merch. That's been a greater challenge to get done than I thought. So maybe we can get something worked out. But I am trying, I promise you.
Mike says, I believe the LBs missed some run fits. Am I wrong? I thought early in the football game, yeah. I mean, obviously, play number one, Arian Carter missed one bad. I thought it got a little bit better as the game went on. But still, there were some drives where I got kind of lazy. I did not think that defensive line, too, that was a very good point of emphasis in this football game. And that brings us to a greater conversation. Defensively, made plays when they had to. Nine straight games holding your opponent under 20 points. If that's a bad day for the defense, sign me up. But, like, they weren't as clean or crisp overall as they have been this year.
Yeah, I didn't think their eyes were as good. And I think that's where you led to some of those misfits. And, you know, you overrun some of those sometimes. I thought they got out of their rush lanes a couple times on quarterback scrambles and let Van de Griff, you know. I mean, he had first and 20, and he got 18 yards on a scramble, you know. So, there's some things there. I just didn't think their eyes were as good. And Rodney Garner's mad and has been mad because he doesn't feel like his team has played as smart, or his group has played as smart as they need to. He thinks their effort's been really good, but they need to play smarter. And I think that when he watched the film and when those guys get to watch the film with him on Monday, there's going to be a lot of wasn't smart enough. You got to play smarter, and that's what Tennessee's got to do moving forward.
Last question out the door here for this week on the Rocket Side Rewind goes to Will. Explain why Heupel's teams are so undisciplined. We touched on it a little bit earlier. Does he not get them in practice? It's embarrassing. Again, it felt like he was heavily disciplined. He was heavily penalized at UCF. In the games they lost in 2021, like Pittsburgh, Florida comes to mind, they were penalized over 100 yards in those football games. The way they move, like, it's almost like they're good for an offensive pass interference a game. You haven't seen as many of those this year. But I think the tempo has some things to do with it. But it's a thing. And you just kind of have to accept that that's who this team is. And it's always a team that's going to be heavily penalized. And it's annoying because when things aren't clicking and you're not scoring in the red zone, those things really hurt you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, a holding play happens. And I'll say this for John Campbell. That wasn't totally his fault on the hold because Nico Bell's out of the pocket and the defensive lineman redirects and John Campbell's in a bad spot. He's trying to protect his quarterback, so he grabbed. Okay. That's a bad time to have one, no. But that was not just, I mean, that was a natural thing to protect your quarterback. What's embarrassing or disappointing to, I'll say embarrassing to borrow Will's terms here, is when you look down the line and you're lined up offsides, you know, when you have somebody covered up, when you false start, you know, and some of the things that you do there, they have officials at practice every day. We're not there. I don't know how hard they grade them in practice. I don't know if there's any kind of punishment for them for having penalties afterwards. I know that Josh Heupel made it very clear early on in the preseason to every official that worked, if you weren't going to call it, if you were there to watch practice, and you weren't going to call the penalties, then you needed to get out of there because he wanted it cleaned up. He wanted it to be better. And at times they've been a little bit better, you know, and other times they've just done some really just not very smart football things. And, you know, those things are very costly. You got to avoid those.
Another week here on the Rocket Top Rewind presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. What?
Sorry, I'm laughing at, was that Mike Oxbig over there talking about, Hub's trying to mail out a VolQuest version of the Sears Roebuck catalog. hey, you're a Braves fan. It may have been gone, but I'm not trying to pick on your age. But when I was a kid, like, there was always an ad during the Braves game for the Braves Clubhouse Store. And you it wasn't online at the time, so you call and got a catalog for the Braves Clubhouse Store where you got all this exclusive Braves merchandise that you couldn't find anywhere else. I never got to order that. My parents never let me order anything out of it. But I thought the Braves Clubhouse Store was like the greatest catalog ever. It superseded any Sears catalog or JCPenney's because I was a big Braves fan growing up. And it was like, that was the stuff. The official clubhouse store of the Braves was pretty good.
The word official really gets you going. It's like, oh, it's not
I mean, it's an authentic jersey, right?
I go to games all the time, right? I'll go to – it's like my hobby, but I always have to go to the official team store and spend something that's way overpriced because that's just how it works.
it's how you it's your version of Austin going to
house at the golf course. 100%. 100%. It's Bobby King. It's Bobby LOP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you, TN Trail Lawyers. These guys, big Tennessee fans like you and I, and they can help you if you have a knee, whether you've been in a car accident, injured, divorced, need to help with custody for children, been accused of a crime. Spivey King and Spivey LOP is here to help you. That free consultation, the phone number, 423-245-4185, 423-245-4185, or online at SpiveyKingandSpiveyLOP.com. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you, TN Trial Lawyers. Appreciate you guys for being here. Thanks so much for sending in your questions all hour long. We'll come back next Sunday night after Tennessee and Mississippi State right here on the Rocky Top Rewind. Appreciate you guys and enjoy the rest of your Sunday evening, everybody.